Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Cowboy Wisdom NLP Radio. I'm Rob Wilson with Cowboy Wisdom NLP Coaching. Tonight you're in for a very special treat. We're going to expand your image and open your mind all at once. And I have the very beautiful and talented Tracy Van Beautiful. Tracy Van Buren is my guest. Welcome, Tracy.
Hi, and thank you.
So, Tracy's website is vanbeautiful.com. If you go on there, you're going to see the images that she can expand you into. And Tracy, taking somebody and giving them a better, allowing them to see themselves in a better image, what does that do for their life?
It changes. Once you change your mind, you begin to, it impacts everything else that you do. It builds your self-confidence, self-worth, and your ability to endeavor in those things that you've always allowed yourself to be held back by. So that's virtually everything.
Yeah, and now there's a question come to me there when you was doing that. When you can see a different image of yourself in the mirror, what does that do to the subconscious mind?
It empowers you. It expands your reach. Oftentimes when you don't have the best image of yourself, you know, you don't see yourself doing much at all. You have yourself contained in this box. But once you can get a better image or a clear image of who you are, it broadens your potential. It broadens your thinking base. It allows you to kind of like reach for things that you ordinarily or didn't think you could. You change your mindset.
That it really does. And now I'm on her website, vanbeautiful.com, and there was one thing that really caught my eye. Teen. You've got something for teens. How is allowing a teen that's very self-conscious change your image and actually empower her or him? Well, mostly you work with female, but I mean to empower them and open their mind to see they're a lot better than everything they've been told. They're a lot more powerful than what they've been told by everybody.
That's exactly it. Teens believe a lot of times, it's sort of like looking in the mirror and you're not really seeing what's there. A lot of times, there's so much going on with teens. They're still evolving. They're trying to keep up with their friends. They're trying to keep up with what the media says is in, what's popular or what's beautiful. That's a lot of stress and a lot of, it's a lot of stress being a teen, I think even more so than when I was a teenager. And so believing in yourself, knowing who you are, and valuing what you have, where you are, is a great foundation. It makes it easier to compete, to be amongst your peers, and to try things that you ordinarily wouldn't try, because I don't look like what they say a beautiful young girl looks like, or I don't look like what the popular girl looks like. It allows you to push past that.
But also today we're so money driven. How does somebody having a good image of themselves actually allow them to feel fit in to when people are making the people's wealth and people's placement in the hierarchy of society really plays in. But giving somebody an image they can really do something really opens them up. And how does that make them feel more qualified to experience life?
Once you get a glimpse of yourself and your ability, and that fire ignites in you that you can do whatever you endeavor, you start to think past your reach. Your vision should always be past your reach. And it allows you to do what your passion is. A lot of times when you're not confident, you don't share with other things that are important to you. I can remember a time as a teen when I had these things that were I'm passionate about, but I wasn't confident, so I didn't share with other people what those things were. And so because you don't share, you don't expound upon them, you don't work at them, and you don't, you know, your passion is where, as it relates to the money part that you talk about, I think a lot of times when you pursue your passion, you become an expert in it because you're passionate about pursuing it. You're learning everything. You're taking everything in about it. And that kind of leads the way to you being like the subject matter expert, and therefore I think the wealth comes with that. I hope I answered your question as it relates to
you. You did.
Okay.
Now, how, you know, in the teenage years, you know, there's so much ridicule and bantering back and forth that can really steal a teen age. I mean, their self-esteem. But how does your coaching actually allow a teen the self-confidence and the self-esteem to move their life forward and take the money out of the equation because it doesn't matter?
Most kids that I've interacted with, money isn't a factor. It's a factor when it comes to having and doing some of the things that other peers are. But most of the time, they just want to be understood. They want to be accepted for who they are and not being, you know, not being judged. And that once they get that and they feel like I'm in a safe place where I can feel comfortable being myself, whether it's quirky, whether it goes against the norm or, you know, fits into this clique or that clique, I think that's when they start to feel better about who they are and you start seeing them blossom. Working with some of the kids, money really isn't a factor. It really isn't. It's just about feeling included and feeling accepted, more so than anything.
You know, how do you feel a teenager being accepted in school, they have to be accepted at home first? How does that play out in your coaching, or have you ever discovered that?
I think it plays a great part because our parents or our guardians, whoever your caregivers are, they are our first teachers. They kind of help to instill your sense of self-worth. And it's hard enough when you have that support at home to deal with, you know, other children that may bully or, you know, have poor self-esteem themselves, which further, you know, impacts how they interact with other people. But having that foundation, a foundation is so important no matter what stage of life you're in, but it's particularly important with teenagers or even before you get to the teenage years, instilling that self-worth, letting the child know what they're good at and how special they are and how beautiful they are on the inside as well as outwardly, it kind of sets the tone. And it's hard to tell a child that's been told pretty much all their life how great they are. You know, and I've been telling you that as a child for years, it's kind of hard for me to convince you otherwise in a school day. I mean, you may hear something that may kind of distract you or even, you know, hurt your feelings, but it's hard to convince you otherwise when you've had that foundation at home.
That's absolutely true. And, you know, this is probably something that a lot of people don't understand. That's why wealthy kids actually probably succeed more than kids that are having challenges because they see their parents successful, so they understand it going through life. And that's what a lot of, you know.
What's your question? Because
that was a comment. I was getting ready for the question.
Okay.
But the kids today, like my parents come out of the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And they have an ingrained poverty consciousness bigger than Texas.
Okay.
But they were great people with a great work ethic.
Right.
But here's the thing. How does your personal coaching actually help the parents expand the kid into being a confident person when you can work with the parent also and the child?
Well, oftentimes I don't work with them together. I wind up working with a parent as a result of working with a group of kids. But when I've had an opportunity to work with a child, and then I meet the parent, I get a really good understanding of some of the dynamics that we've had to kind of work around. And you're right, that mindset is pretty hard, and you teach it consciously and unconsciously to your children. It's almost like, you know, I couldn't do, we didn't do, this is all we've ever done, and I'm kind of teaching you that that's what you should do, too. I'm hoping that you do better. I wish that you would, but I'm really teaching you through my actions and my own belief system that I've set up for myself that this is all you will ever amount to, and unfortunately, that cycle, it continues more times than not.
Boy, it really does. And you see it. You know, as a union electrician, I love it when I get these parents or kids get up into the teams and the guys or girls you're working with say, my kid is not going to be an electrician. He's going to go to college. Well, they go to college and then they become an electrician. That's the honest God truth, because you get to learn on the job, and some of the work really isn't very fantastic, but, you know, we make enough just to stay in it, not enough to get out of it. And that's why. But but that's kind of the way life is. But whatever you don't want your kids to be, you feel that's what they really end up doing, because you put the don't in there and the subconscious understands that, Tracy?
Right. I totally agree. I totally agree. Here's the don't. And here's the don't. And you're asking the universe to bring you more of that when you do it. And you're teaching your children to do the same thing.
Well, I'm reading on your website, and you know, you have one of the few websites that doesn't have a don't, won't, can't, won't, or something like that. Doesn't have a word the subconscious mind doesn't pick up. But you've got something on here that's very astute, and I want to balancing the demand of life. How does that really, when people understand every day is going to be something happen, you're going to be tested for patience every day. How do you bring that out in people that, you know, some days you get everything, some days you don't? How do you open people up to understand life gets in the way of life, and some days it just happens that way?
It's like really sitting down and after we've been in sessions after a couple of times and being able to understand how that person processes some information, I normally, you know, ask questions in such a way that they kind of get it for themselves. But the gist of it is, okay, this happened. You had 8 hours at work today. And when they start talking about the negative thing that happened, I ask them, so tell me something that you did like. Tell me what happened that you affected that went really well. And did that one thing, because you were wanting to spend about 5 minutes talking about this negative impact, but you had another 7 hours of great stuff that happened. And it didn't stop the day. The day continued. And see it as, I kind of call it, not looking at the entire cake, but a slice in the cake. And that's all it was. You were able to get past it. And that's pretty much how life is. You look at it as a 7 or 8 hour increment. Then we start looking at it as a week. And then we look at it as a month. And then say, well, that's really how life is. You're not going to fall down and stop living because this situation happened. You're going to have to find a way to go through it, go around it, go over it, but keep moving in spite of.
You know something else, if something happens that you don't get to that, maybe there was a reason that wasn't supposed to happen that day.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And, you know, but you also have something else on here that's really astute. I'm on Tracy's website, Van Beautiful. And if you go on there, you're going to see Tracy Van Beautiful. And Tracy is very beautiful. But on vanbeautiful.com, simplifying your life. In this day and age, Tracy, how does that increase the self-esteem but also make them more patient with their own life?
Well, simplifying is sometimes it's so interesting. I was talking to a client, and we're talking about simplifying. Sometimes it takes you to compartmentalize and realize what you get from where and where you give to where, meaning I'm a giver and I'm a lover and I'm a hugger and I love people. And so I kind of used to expect everyone to be like that, but everyone's not made up like that. And so I would realize, okay, I've given this to somebody, but they may not have it in them to give it back to me. And it doesn't make them a bad person. That's just their makeup. So then you have to, you know, compartmentalize. When I'm feeling this way or when I need this, this is who I go to, this is what I do. Kind of simplifying it, understanding what you get from what source, so that you don't need something, but then you're going to the wrong source and you're walking away frustrated and exasperating the whole situation.
And, you know, and much as, and another thing to add, I got another question.
Mm-hmm.
How did the parents in the school system actually ingrain, well, if you didn't get it done, they ingrained you're in trouble if you didn't get it done. And how does that come forward through their whole life? If they didn't get it done, they berate themselves. How do you get them to expand out of that, the parent and the school system and stuff like that, Tracy?
You mean an example, like a to-do list or something that was supposed to have been done today? Or
yeah, like an assignment, you know, something happened. You know, things happen when you're a kid. Well, sometimes, most of the time, because you just didn't do it.
Right.
But I mean, you always got berated, so you always tried not to get in trouble. And then when you have a to-do list, let's say you have it for today, you start beating yourself up because you didn't get everything done. And that creates a stress in your life. And then how do you get people to see that the stresses they create from not getting things, everything the way they choose it to be done that day, how do you get them to understand their stress and self-implied is what I'm trying to guess.
Well, and that goes back to that. The kid that feels that pressure, and by the way, they feel a lot of pressure with all of the school demands and athletics. It's like children are scheduled out of the world right now, but there's a lot of pressure, and you see that same pressure in the kid who's now 35 or 40 years old. And I don't know, it originates from a lot of places. It could be that parent, the plumber parent who wants his child to go to school, to go to college because he doesn't want him to end up like him. So he puts these pressures on this child. And the child, and sometimes we don't know why. We don't want to disappoint. Children don't want to disappoint people that they love and people that they depend on. And so a lot of times that happens. How do I get them to turn it around? Knowing that it's okay and you didn't get it done. So what's the fallout? What happens if you didn't get it done? You know, it's kind of a tricky situation because you want to keep people, you want people to learn the lesson of completing the task, but you also want them to know that it's okay that your inbox is never empty. It's okay if you need to put that off until tomorrow, depending on what it is. That's a tricky situation. And you almost have to look at it in a case-by-case situation. But sometimes people don't do it because they're withholding.
Here's a question I always ask when somebody says, I didn't get this done or that done. I just says, anybody bleeding or dying? And then they're kind of, are you going to get out of bed in the morning?
Right.
Say, well, be there in the morning, so nothing's really, nothing bad.
Right. That's a simple answer, yes.
I mean, it takes a. But now I'm on the page I saved for last, your image coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Conversation skills. Keys to conversational success. How do you get people to understand they listen their way to wealth, Tracy?
I'm sorry. Ask the question one more time. I didn't hear you.
Okay, I'm sorry. You know, I'm on your image page, and it says conversation skills.
Mm-hmm.
Keys to conversational success. How do you get people to open up to understand listening in the moment?
The impact of what they're missing when they don't, what they're gaining when they do. A lot of times, you know, you get things accomplished a lot more when you're really listening. A lot of times we we hear one or two words and we are already off taking care of the task and we're not listening. And so you work twice as hard getting something done because you're going off of what, you know, that quick response, and you've already moved forward as opposed to really staying in the moment. Staying in the moment, just reminding the person that it really, especially with loved ones, that's a good one. With loved ones, when you're staying in the moment and you're really listening, you're showing respect. You're showing that you care for them and that you value what they're saying and that they're kind of breathing into you. It's an exchange, and they're breathing into you. And a lot of people, you know, they can relate to that.
And that, you know, that's something else. And now I had something come up yesterday, and I learned something significant. And I was going to ask you this. I was doing something, and anyway, it come out to where war, the person liked war. How do you feel we understand war more than we understand peace, Tracy?
Because that's the environment that we live in. It's retaliatory. It's a response. It's a knee-jerk response. A lot of times we don't understand peace until, you know, peace is calm. I've actually heard people say, I feel a certain way. I don't feel like I need to be doing anything. I don't feel rushed, but I don't feel bad. And they don't even recognize when they see it, but you're used to going all the time, as you say, completing that list that needs to be done right now, or protecting yourself, or checking off on something. And that's a sense of war, whether it's an internal war or a war that's a fight for your territory. And that's something that can come out. A baby learns that. When you cry, you get something. It's almost like that negative thing.
You know, the thing about the truth and peace and honesty and all that, it takes no energy.
It doesn't.
I mean, you're not wrong. We're so used to being stressed out and run out. We understand war because it takes energy. Peace takes no energy.
It doesn't.
Because it's
unless until you start. I think when you initially start, it takes a discipline to be still.
That's it. That's why people have, when they first start meditating, the biggest challenge is the peace.
It is. And you feel like, I need to be doing something. I need to be saying something. Right.
You know, the easiest thing would be to be calm. But it's the hardest thing because we don't understand it subliminally. You're absolutely right on there. Now I'm still on the image page, and there's something here, color analysis. Discover your color. How important is that for somebody to move forward, especially going to like a job interview or some, you know, something where people get really stressed out, but how is discovering that color actually take some of the stress out of that?
Well, for us women, color plays a huge effect on us. You know, it's used in everything. It's used in the jail system. I don't think you would ever go in and see a pink wall. It's gray, and it's supposed to kind of subdue the mood or what have you. But for an image perspective, there's the way it makes us feel. There's also the image that it projects. Blue is a color that you wear when you're selling something or you're with a team because it denotes trust and friendliness or what have you. Red is a power or passionate color. But then there are certain things about a person's tone. I don't know about you, but I know a lot of women can relate to going in and trying on a dress, and it looked beautiful in the magazine or it looked great on a mannequin, and when you try it on, you don't feel good, and all of a sudden your whole euphoric high about shopping for this event or this date is kind of fizzled and nothing fits. And it's not necessarily the fit of it sometimes that's it, but a lot of times it's the color. You take the same dress, change the color, that complements your skin tone and then your hair, what have you, and it changes your mood. I ran into a lady at the bank, one of the ladies that worked there. She's like, I don't feel well, and she didn't know what was going on. I can't explain it. I'm not sad. I said, you know, every time I see you have on blue, I saw her yesterday, and she had a really nice blue shirt. She goes, you know what? I didn't realize it. Every time I wear blue, I feel happy. And I feel like I'm excited about being at work. So that's her thing now. She almost always incorporates blue into something, whether it's on her attire or something on her desk. Colors have a big impact on it.
Something just come to me, and I really want to ask you. A light blue, does that remind people when they look at it, like looking at the sky? Because if you tip your head about 3 degrees and go out there till your eyes meet and sit there, you get real relaxed. So when she sees blue, do you feel that relaxes her subconscious mind?
I believe it does. I definitely believe it does. Yeah, it does.
And when people see black, do you think they, you know, like a black color in a car? Do you think that shows power to me? What does that do for you?
It's power and it's luxury. And for us ladies, it's very slimming.
Then when you see red, you kind of get a tingle, or blue. But I never noticed that until you just said something about that blue, how colors do really do that. And light and white is kind of just a bland color when you see it in the car. But when it's all chromed out, it's really nice. Did you notice a black vehicle and a white vehicle when they got a lot of chrome on them and clean and shiny? They catch your eye?
Right, exactly. It's feeling of power and the whole luxury. I mean, people are very, very, even in marketing, they're very specific about the colors that they use. Think about it. Almost everything that you see associated with children are the yellows and the light neon blues, those primary colors, because those are excited type colors. When you think about restaurants, a lot of restaurants have the oranges and the reds because they're passionate and they tend to make us hungry, believe it or not.
They do that too good for me, Tracy, that red stuff on them. Determine your personal body shape and fit.
Right.
How is that probably the most powerful, empowering thing women can do?
Well, the great thing is that the great designers of, you know, the world are starting to understand and reflect that women come in so many different sizes and shapes. You know, you could have, I'm 5'7", and so I think that's about average, but that's not everybody's height. Going in and knowing what would look best on me based upon my height and my body size and shape is going to make a world of difference. It's the same experience you have in that dress. When you know what works for you, you can nail it every time. And when you feel good, you're that much more confident about whatever it is that you're endeavoring, whether it's in a social setting, whether it's, you know, in a business setting or whatever. It changes. It changes how you interact with people. I know you've probably seen it before when people have something to say, but they're too busy pulling on their clothes or what have you. I'm very subconscious. What it's saying is I'm very subconscious about how I look. And my mind is not on meeting you or interacting with you or even teaching you or sharing anything with you. I'm trying to cover up what I'm uncomfortable about.
Isn't that the way we all are?
We all are. There's always something that we want to change about ourselves. The grass is always greener on someone else.
And Tracy Van Beautiful is my guest, Tracy Van Buren. Her website is vanbeautiful.com. It's very simple, vanbeautiful.com. Simplicity works in everything. And her Twitter account is I Am Van on Twitter. But anyway, Tracy, we're down to the last 20 seconds. Give the people some wisdom and I'll close out the show.
Know who you are and love yourself exactly where you are. No matter what you change, what you want to change or what you aspire to change. When you love where you are, you can make changes from there and be your best self. I wish everyone a happy holiday and a prosperous new year.
And I want to thank Tracy for being my guest. I want to thank all the listeners, and I want to wish everybody a very Merry Christmas. And we'll be here next week with, I'll be here Monday night, Douglas Malloy Tuesday, Cindy Ricolo Wednesday, and a gentleman out of Canada with the Ancient Canada book, Clint Fiesta. Fiesta is his name. And anyway, Tracy, I want to thank you, and we wish everybody a good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you for being my guest.